Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. My guest tonight is Dr. Dave Hall. He's a friend of mine. We've known each other for quite some time and has been a professor at University of Pacific for many years. Dave, thank you for joining.
Glad to be here. Looks like fun.
Oh, it is fun here. We're cash. You're not teaching at University of Pacific anymore, or are you?
Well, I'm teaching a summer course online. I'm not sure that I'll get to teach it in the classroom because we've hired a new young professor to take over the work, and I'm looking forward to some retirement, but I'll never stop teaching sex.
Oh, good. Well, and just exactly, tell us a little bit about this career of yours. You've been teaching sex to college students?
Well, I had a career in aviation, and after many years in working in aviation, I thought, there are a lot of things I don't know. I think I'll go back to school. And the one thing I knew the least about was sex. So I went back to school and studied sex, got a PhD in the stuff.
Was this from the Institute of Human Sexuality?
Yeah, at the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco.
Awesome.
And in the process wound up getting associated with the University of Pacific by marrying a faculty member. And so...
Rosie.
And my wife, Rosie, has been teaching sex here since the 70s, and so I started team teaching, and the next thing I know, she said, I'm going off to other things. You finished this course.
Wow, you've been doing this since the 70s. I'll bet you've seen a lot of changes.
Well, she's been doing it since the 70s. I've been doing it since the mid to late 90s.
Okay.
And yes, I've seen a lot of changes.
Well, like what? Are we more liberal or more conservative?
Well, there's a cycling. You know, there was a period where in the 70s where it was more liberal, and then it got very conservative, and it swung back for a little bit of liberalism, and now I think we're moving more toward conservatism again, although I think this next election might change things.
I was just going to ask you if you thought that there was a connection between which political party happens to be in office or...
Well, certainly as far as sex education is concerned, that's very true.
Because I started college in 1978, and that was just before Reagan got into office.
Right.
And that was the first time I'd actually taken sex ed because I went to school at home. Mm-hmm. I was homeschooled. And my parents were very, very religious, conservative people.
Right. Mine too.
Yeah. So that was, and it was pretty open-minded at that point. And then, of course, Reagan went into office and things got pretty...
Yes.
Conservative.
But yes, and this particular administration that we hope will be leaving is very, very conservative and with respect to sex education. They have, you know, several things that are really important to them. One, they want us all to be ignorant about sex. It's been written into the law. Unfortunately, that law was signed by Bill Clinton. But abstinence education requires ignorance. It requires a lack of accountability by the instructor to the reality, to the facts, etc. So young people today that keep the kids that I'm teaching in college grew up in a school system that was basically required to teach them abstinence and nothing else.
Wow. So by the time they get to college, have they learned anything about safer sex? Or?
Well, some of them have, of course, from parents and other people.
Right.
But mostly what they get in school is some biology. And don't do it till you're married because it'll kill you or something.
Oh, my God. That's even hard for me to wrap my mind around.
Well, yes, it is.
So, you know, I would have never... Do you know the reason I started masturbation was because I learned it in sex ed at college? I was raised so religiously and so strictly that I never even touched myself until I was 18.
Well, I would hope that students in my class don't learn about masturbation and make that the focus of their course. I hope that they've learned about it by themselves, from friends or whatever, by the time they got to college. But if they haven't, what they need to learn is that there's nothing wrong with it. And if that frees them up to try it, then more power to them.
Have you talked about masturbation with...
Well, of course,
students?
It's a part of the curriculum, and we talk about how natural it is. You know, there have been indications that male fetuses get erection. One can't tell what's going on with female fetuses.
Actually, you know something? I've got to find the reference for this, but somebody just emailed me something about 2 weeks ago about a female fetus documented having an orgasm in the womb.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about how that was figured out, because that seems like taking fetal behavior and making it adult.
Well, what they observed were muscular contractions, convulsions.
Okay, so muscular contractions take place. Mamas can tell you all about that. They get kicked all the time.
Uh-huh.
And the wrist development isn't well enough along for a baby, much less a fetus, to be able to manipulate their genitalia efficiently.
Yeah. So male fetuses, as far as you're concerned, they don't touch themselves in the womb?
Oh, sure they do. But I don't think that muscular development, wrist development, for example,
uh-huh.
is sufficient to allow a little male baby to masturbate. I don't think that happens.
Huh.
I think what we do is we see what's going on in the womb and we apply adult sensuality to it. Same thing we do when we see kids playing doctor.
Mm-hmm.
We see two little five-year-olds playing doctor, a boy and a girl.
Yeah.
And we freak out because we think they're having sex, and they're just playing.
Yeah. Okay.
So we have to be careful we don't apply adult behavioral models to children and fetuses.
Well, I hear you. I'm sure there's room for people of science to disagree. There always is.
Yeah, I think so.
That's why it's a great thing, because somebody can come out with a hypothesis, and then other people can come around and try to disprove it.
Yeah, and eventually we'll be able to do the kind of brainwave research or whatever that will allow us to better understand the development of the brain.
Absolutely. If you could see what was going on inside the hypothalamus, you could probably figure that one out, huh? For our listeners, the hypothalamus is what?
It's a part of the brain that has a great deal to do with your sexuality.
Yeah. You remember the experiment with the rat, right? He was given one lever for food and one lever to stimulate the hypothalamus, and he starved to death.
Yeah, don't worry about the food.
It's like, if you could have orgasmic stimulation, we won't eat.
Well, I want to go back to the ignorance thing, the government-required ignorance.
And if you could, I mean, I don't know if you have access to this kind of, information or not, or maybe you've just seen it anecdotally with your own students, but I'm concerned about the whole idea about abstinence is we're trying to get rid of these annoying byproducts like teen pregnancies and sexually transmitted diseases, and I guess the question would be, is it working in that capacity?
Of course not. You don't have to be a great scientist to figure out that in Europe, where they get good comprehensive sex education, the teen birth rate's down, the STD rates are down, and in the West, United States particularly, where we don't get good sex education, where we get abstinence only forced upon us, you get high teen pregnancy rates. They're going up, back up again after being flat for a little while, a couple of years, and you get high STD rates. And so you don't have to be a scientist, you don't have to do detailed studies to show, or at least to learn, that we need to do something differently if we want to reduce the teen pregnancy rate. If we want to reduce the STD rate among youngsters, we've got to do something different. And our government doesn't want to do it differently. I'm pleased to say that a lot of states are turning down the abstinence-only money, finally, because they're finding out it doesn't work in their country, in their states and in their school systems.
Right.
The second thing that the government tries to force upon us is secrecy. And so they try to censor anything about sex that they can, so that we can't see anything about sex. We can't visually or read or anything else about sex if the government had any way about it. So the big two is ignorance and secrecy, and that leads to the biggest of the three, or the worst of the three, I think, is the trauma that people experience. We have a lot of sexual trauma in this country. People who... I had a person come to me and say, when I was 13 years old, my brother showed me... This is a woman. My brother showed me his penis. And this woman was in her 30s and couldn't date because she was so sexually traumatized by seeing her brother's penis. And of course, the Janet Jackson's breast thing, and the cover of this motherhood magazine that had a bare breast, and like 40% of the subscribers to the magazine complained that their families, their kids, were going to see a bare breast. I mean, hopefully every kid sees a bare breast when he's nursing.
You would hope.
And in much of the world, breasts are just not covered up much. The third world.
Yes, I checked into a nice little hotel in San Francisco last year, and there was a European version of a Vanity Fair, and on the cover was a young girl, full-breasted, nursing a baby. And, you know, the nipple was covered up by the baby's head. But I thought to myself, this is just, you know, you're a woman's magazine that you could get off of, you know, any supermarket counter, but you couldn't find it in this country.
No.
No, but, you know, I'm much more likely to see somebody wearing a piece of dental floss for a bikini.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, as long as it's selling maybe a set of tires
kind
of gossip about a movie star starlet.
We can sell an entertainment. We can sell.
But God forbid it should be linked to something that the breast was actually intended for, like, you know, feeding babies.
So a good sex education class points out to the student what their body looks like, what their body's about,
uh-huh.
How it came to be the way it is through the development cycle, how it works. They get encouraged to examine their bodies and learn about their bodies. And
how do you do that in a setting of a college classroom?
Well, college is so much easier because you can, you know, the students are adults. You can talk about things honestly. You're expected to be honest. You're expected to be accurate. You're not expected to be a cover-up or a agent of the government trying to hide things. And the last thing you're going to tell a student is that having sex will damage them permanently. Yes, you can have some psychological problems by irresponsible sexual behavior, and heaven hopes that we can help them stop having babies before they're ready. You know, that can screw up your life worse than anything. But the real point is to teach responsible behavior. And, of course, you know, the government will not let you teach that sex is about pleasure.
I was just, boy, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say, do you think that if we could teach people how to pursue pleasure without pregnancy, and in fact, a lot of, I'm sure you must agree, a lot of things that are pleasurable don't even lead to pregnancy, but when we're not allowed to talk about that, we really don't have a lot of options.
Well, first of all, if you do any little bit of thinking about it, you realize that given the number of babies that are born each year to an individual woman, i.e. maybe two at the most, three sometimes, and if we're talking twins and triplets, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
We know that she had sex, intercourse, once for that baby.
Yes.
We also know that the average human being has intercourse lots more times. So, you know, the odds are that intercourse takes place for pleasure thousands of times more often than it does for procreation.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we focus on the procreative aspects of it because we have this religious history that says sex is for procreation. And we don't focus on sex is have a good time. Now, there are some religions that are perfectly okay about, you know, you should enjoy sexuality. But there are a lot of them that make sexuality of any kind other than husband and wife sexuality a sin, and you shouldn't do it. And some religions think pleasure is a sin. You shouldn't have fun.
That's kind of a pervasive cultural standard in the United States. Just like we don't take nearly as much vacation time as Europeans do. I mean, the whole thing is that we're about work.
Yes.
So how are you online teaching pleasure to college students?
Well, I give them lots of good, interesting reading assignments. I give them one of my textbooks is The Guide to Getting It On, which is one, as you know, one of the...
Oh, yeah, I helped edit the first edition of that.
...funnest books around, and it's only $20, and anybody can buy it. Plug. And I also have an excellent scientific textbook called Our Sexuality, and within this context, we talk a lot about pleasure, about what sex is, what the various ways to have sex, the various ways to enjoy yourself, and the way your body response to pleasure.
Now, you also show porn, or do you?
Well, I do typically at the last, I can't online, but I do at the last class. Interestingly enough, in my last class, the one you came and talked to, the last day, three out of 56 students stayed to watch the adult entertainment section, which would be called porn. I don't know whether the rest of them were preparing for final exams or had seen all the porn they wanted to see.
Yeah, are you telling me 3 out of 56?
Yes.
You're kidding.
It was very interesting. So
you wouldn't think you'd have to twist a kid's arm to...
A couple of years ago, they were bringing their friends and bringing popcorn.
Ah.
And this
now, do you think maybe it's because there's so much porn online and you know, there's a, what is that one? It's not YouTube, but it's like YouTube, only it's for porn. Maybe they've just gotten so much of it, they've kind of gotten...
I don't know. My sense was that this class was a little bit more open-minded than average. On the other hand, it was a different environment. Previously, I'd taught in a theater environment, so kids could come and sit and, you know, separated from each other and eat popcorn. And now we're crammed in that tiny little classroom, the maximum number of chairs in that we could get.
Right.
And I don't know. I would love to be able to do a survey, but I don't have any access to students anymore.
A theatrical setting does sound a little more comfortable. Kind of, like you're not sitting right on top of the other students.
Yeah, you sit with the people you want to sit with and in the space around. So.
Right.
I don't know the answer to that. I do show explicit films twice. I show some behavioral films, including masturbation and other stuff, in the middle of the class. And I excuse students who don't want to come. And about half the class came for that one.
Now, have you ever had parents complain about your curriculum?
Oh, not in years. I remember one of my wife's favorite stories was right after the intro to the class where she had shown them the syllabus and talked about what the class was about. She gets a phone call from a mother, and the mother says, "I understand you are going to show my daughter X-rated videos." And my wife said, "Yes." And there was a silence, and the mother hung up. The daughter wrote her term paper on the big O. I think, you know, you get kids who want to, you know, weigh something under their parents' nose, and the parents can get upset. But actually, I think I should probably say that your visit to the university, which was shown on KCR 83, Channel 3.
Yes, that was the out of Sacramento.
I found out yesterday that that had been shown around the country for 3 weeks, and the university got lots of favorable publicity from it.
Which I'm amazed, and I'm encouraged.
So was the guy from marketing who told me that.
They were so terrified. We had to have who was the guy who came in to supervise everything? And
well, he was the guy who told me this. He said,
oh, he's the one that told
me. That turned out great. So I'm tickled pink.
I am thrilled to hear that as well, and I didn't have any negative fallout from it either. And in years gone by, some of the television that I have done has backfired on me. So. Was all in all very nicely done.
Yes, and the people from Channel 3 were excellent. They were very good to us.
Yes. And just for folks who are listening in here, I want to remind you that this is actually a call-in show, too, and you're welcome to call in with your questions or comments if you have any. And if you want to check out the episode that we're talking about, you can actually go to kcra.com, I believe, is the website. And look for Prostitution 101. That's what they called that episode. And they've actually got the entire thing uploaded to the website so you can watch it live, streaming online. And if you want to call in and talk to us, the number to dial, get it here in just a second, I don't have them memorized. The call-in numbers are... let's see, USA only, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. USA and Canada, you can call toll-free at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And for those of you who are local, 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. And I don't know if you know this, but we're actually, the area code 530 is right in around the Chico area. I think we get quite a few listeners from Chico State. So I don't know if you know any of the people who teach up there or not, Doctor.
Yeah, actually I have some friends that are up there. I don't know very many people teaching sex anywhere in the country, but
really?
I do have some faculty friends that are... Chico.
Is it unusual? Because I usually only talk to the professors' classes who are getting taught sex ed. So I'm not aware. Are there entire universities that don't have sex ed?
Well, I don't know the answer to that because there's so many of them. But
yeah.
Locally, there's a course taught at the community college in Stockton. I'm aware that there's a course at at Sacramento State.
Right.
I don't know, and you've spoken over at Sonoma State, but I don't know much about the junior college.
I have. When I talk to Sonoma State, though, it's not usually a class about sex. It's a a lot of times it's more like they're teaching human biology for nursing,
mm-hmm. yeah.
or sociology, psychology, poli-sci, political science, and I come in and give people you know, my perspective.
And at Pacific, we have a gender studies minor that teaches the psych of gender and a whole bunch of other courses that are related to, not specifically sexuality, but related to the whole issue of gender and sexuality. So there are courses available. It's just that a specific course called Human Sexuality, I would have to do some research to find out who's teaching it.
Well, so now that you're teaching online, are there any particular impediments or challenges?
Well, one is that given the system that we use called Blackboard, I can't do streaming video. The firewall at the university is too strong to, and their internet pipe is too small to permit me to show videos, for example, in class. So
okay.
everything's done by PowerPoint slides. But other than that, it's pretty much the same course.
Well,
and
that,
of course, I don't get to bring in guest speakers.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to bring me in.
Well, I did. I told my students to listen tonight. But
oh, good. Well, I'm thinking about some of the online, like, networking sites that I go to, like eCademy. I network on eCademy, and we start forums, discussion forums. I'll be able to use the word sex, but if I use the word orgasm, it will come up just *** because it completely obliterates the word. And I'm wondering how do you get past those kind of filters?
I have to tell you, we watched a Frontline episode on growing up young and restless in China. Very interesting show about a bunch of young people. They followed for 4 years. And when the Chinese swore in Chinese, it was *** in the subtitles.
That's funny. So I guess you don't have any filters, huh?
I don't.
Oh, that's good.
You know me well. I'm pretty much out there.
No, I mean the software, since you're teaching online.
Oh, no. They get my lectures, and they take quizzes, and they read the textbook, and they write answer discussion questions, and we have a lot of interaction, and there's no filtering.
Oh, good. That's good. So there's no words that you're not allowed to use, huh?
No. Not a bit.
And now, university, so this online class is for the University of Pacific, right?
Yes.
Okay. And people can or cannot get a degree in sexuality at University of Pacific?
No, there's no degree. You get a minor in gender studies if you wish.
Okay.
There's only really one place you can get a degree in human sexuality, and that's at the Institute in San Francisco.
That's what I thought.
There's an education, an ED, an education degree in sex education, back in the Philadelphia area at Widener University.
Uh-huh.
But the only other place you can do any kind of comprehensive doctoral work in human sexuality is through the Kinsey Institute. They have a joint program with the University of Wisconsin, University of Minnesota, and University of Indiana. And you can do a multidisciplinary sexuality degree there.
Yeah. Kinsey Institute, did you know they have a file on me over there?
I should hope so.
They contacted me about 10 years ago and said, please send us your stuff. We want to put you on in our library. And
yes.
I said, really?
Yes.
I'm honored.
Great.
So, I'm just curious about the, when I was getting certified as a sex educator through San Francisco Sex Information,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Zimbardo, you know, Zimbardo from Stanford,
right.
His son, Adam Zimbardo,
right.
was facilitating the class that I took.
Right.
And one of the statistics that they gave us, and it was probably a loosely quoted statistic, but was that we were getting 60 hours of intense sexual education, which was considered to be five times that of what your average medical doctor gets.
Right.
Is that your understanding?
Yes, and I think the typical therapist in a Master of Social Work or LCSW program gets 10 hours.
Oh, my God.
And I got I applied to teach that course at the University of Phoenix, which is basically a, you know, a big school. It's the biggest university in the country now.
University of Phoenix?
Yeah. And
wow.
With my PhD in human sexuality, I was not qualified to teach that course because I didn't have the 10 hours of LCSW or Master of Social Work work.
Okay. But so why aren't we teaching our doctors, our medical doctors that deal with the human body, why aren't they getting more sex ed?
Because the priorities of the schools are that they have, every school has so much to teach. To fit sex in when it isn't absolutely necessary.
Uh-huh.
To compare to passing medical exams, there are no questions about sex on medical exams that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And so they have to teach to pass the exams, teach them to be good doctors. And good doctors should know how to deal with sexuality, but they don't, or at least the ones that I've talked to. I was hired by Pfizer to do some lectures to doctors about taking a sex history.
Right.
And I'm telling you, these doctors did not want to do that. They didn't want to hear. Why do I have to do that? Why do I have to do that? They'll tell me if they have a problem.
Oh, my Lord.
And I tried to convince them that they should, as part of intake, just get a sex history, particularly for youngsters. No, they'll tell me if they have a problem.
So to me, that's just so shame-based that then the patient doesn't usually feel very comfortable talking to their doctor about sex.
Well, because we've made it uncomfortable to talk about sex under any circumstances. That's the secrecy part. We make sex so secret that we can't talk about it to our parents. We can't hardly talk about it to our spouses.
And the objection that I have is that it's also made peripheral. So it's considered a necessary or healthy part of life. And to me, I'm like, really? I think sex should be have a more central role because it is such a defining element. I mean, you know, when you think three-year-olds start trying to sort themselves out as far as gender goes,
mm-hmm.
It's really a lot more than just some little branch off there. Okay, yeah, it's there, but it's not a central part of our being.
You do understand that we would have a much more peaceful society if we were a more sexual society.
Oh, I believe that, but, you know, I'm a big fan of the bonobos, the apes that like sex and have no violence.
And I believe that our society is trying to raise up warriors, not peaceful people.
Oh, I think you're right about that, yeah. Yeah. So what do you have a belief that, you know, we're going to be moving into something that'll be a little more liberal, or are you actively involved in trying to change the politics?
Well,
when it comes to sex education?
I have my political activism.
Huh?
I have some political activism involvement.
Oh, tell me about it.
Well, I was marching in the Pride Parade yesterday.
Oh, you were?
Oh, of course.
Was that picture you just sent me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I didn't realize that was from yesterday.
Yes, that was the Pride Parade, and I had a great time. I marched with the Institute from San Francisco, but I watched the parade until they came along, and then I just jumped in. It was a great time, and the crowds were huge, and they were very enthusiastic. But the focus on the parade was to defeat the marriage amendment, to defeat incorporating hate into the Constitution of the state of California.
Yeah.
And so there were signs everywhere, and there were couples who, we just got married signs, and, you know, together 25 years, finally married, that kind of thing. And Macy's had a wonderful group where they had funny, funny signs about Cinderella had a shoe fetish and things like that. And so they were out there, their employees were out there supporting the marriage amendment thing. And so it was really great. And that's an important political activism. I just put a sign in my window so my neighbors know.
Yay.
So, yes, I'm involved in trying to change our society.
Yeah. I had, you know, last year I attended a friend, straight friends, got married in a really beautiful setting and had a fairy tale wedding, and then a gay couple that I know had a commitment ceremony because it was before this recent legislation and they weren't allowed to actually have a wedding. And when I contrasted the two ceremonies and the two social gatherings, I had to say that the gay ceremony seemed like it was so much more focused on the actual connection between the couple.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it incredibly emotionally moving, Whereas my straight friends, I felt like they were just kind of pandering to something they saw in a magazine about what the perfect wedding would look like as opposed to what it would feel like. And, you know, obviously, I got married myself one time to a man, so I'm not putting down straight marriages, but I had to laugh and think how sad it is, you know, that people are so afraid that if we let gay people get married, they're going to ruin marriage.
Well, the data is that in Massachusetts, where they've had gay marriage for quite a few years now, there hasn't been, to my knowledge, a single divorce where they said, we're getting divorced because of gay marriage. It doesn't. We get 50% of straight marriages end in divorce, and not a one of them is complaining that
I know.
It was gay that did it.
How fragile is our heterosexual relationships if gay people can threaten them? It's very strange.
Yes, it's strange, and again, it's about education. If people understood genetics, if the people understood sexual orientation in a more fundamental way, we would have less homophobia. And
so what do you teach your students about?
I teach them what we do know and what we don't know about sexual orientation and gender.
And what is that?
Well, first of all, we don't as yet understand all the aspects of how sexual orientation comes about biologically or psychologically. We certainly don't understand transgender development yet. But we're learning. We're studying. We're doing the research. Maybe someday we'll know more. The fear, of course, is that if you figure out that there's some genetic basis for homosexuality, then you'll start having abortions because the genetic data says this child's going to be gay and therefore we ought to kill the child. You know,
we're certainly scared of what
the data will show, yet we, as scientists, are still trying to figure it out. So
how would you allay those fears, or what kind of mechanisms do you think we could put in place so that
people like you. I have a transgendered speaker come in. I have a gay panel come in and talk about who they are and what their life was like.
But that's a far cry from getting a parent to want to actually have a child that's got a different sexual orientation than they do.
Well, you know, it's one thing to want a gay child. I don't think anybody goes and gets pregnant because they want a gay child. I think people get pregnant because they want a child. What they have to do is learn to love their child no matter how the child turns out. And that's a difficult task for a lot of young people today.
It is a difficult task for a lot of parents. I think parents want their child to kind of be like a carbon copy of themselves or something.
Well, look at how many children get abused, physically abused, before they're even old enough to talk. So we've got a problem. We've got a drug problem. We've got a problem with people having children too young before. One of the things we do know is that the brain is still developing, and particularly the frontal lobes of the brain are still developing up into the late teens and 20s. And so decision-making processes, which rely on your frontal lobes, decision-making processes are not the best that they could be in the teen years.
No.
And yes, the passion is there because the part of the brain that deals with passion is well-developed, but the part of the brain that deals with rational decisions is well-developed in the teen years.
Yeah, and maybe we should tell our listeners that the frontal lobe actually controls your impulse control, so you literally do not have the same level of impulse control.
Right. And so this is a difficult thing to learn, particularly when you're a teen. You don't want to learn that. You don't want people to tell you that your brain's not ready.
Yeah.
Particularly when the rest of your body is very ready.
Right. So what do you... Okay, so let's say the parents are worried. It's like, we don't want sex ed because, like you just told us, the frontal lobes of our children are not well developed. We don't want them out there having sex. And so we think the best way to make sure they don't have sex is to not teach them about it.
Okay, so let's go back to 101. You're learning about sex from the day you're born. You're learning it through the behavior of your parents, the behavior of your peers, the behavior of your siblings, the behavior of your family. You learn about sex from everything around you. When you begin to watch television, you learn about sex from television. When you begin to read, you learn about sex from reading. I saw one of my students put up his picture on the site, and he was standing in front of a sign, which was in Washington, D.C., that said, "Parents, talk to your kids about sex. Everybody else is..." Yeah. And so my firm belief is that parents need sex education, because once parents are educated, then they're prepared to teach their kids and to talk to their kids. I mean, they don't want to teach them, but they're prepared to talk to them about sex in an intelligent way. And so what's critical is sex education for adults. But no, what we get is sex fear for adults. Uh-huh. We get the war on sex. Marty Klein's wonderful book, America's War on Sex, tells us in many, many ways how the government and other people are fighting sex. They don't want you to have pleasure. They don't want you to know about sex. They're scared that you might be having sex, and they're not, or they're not doing it right. You know, the biggest question people have when they go into therapy is, am I normal? I like to do this. I like to do this sort of thing. I like to go this way. Is that okay?
Do your students ever ask you those kind of questions?
They get the answers in the course. They don't have to ask the question. They may take the course to get the answer.
Right.
Because I get a fair number of gay and lesbian students, bisexual students. I'm not aware that I've ever had a transgendered student in the class. But I am aware that putting information in front of them answers their questions.
Yeah.
And so parents could buy the guide to getting it on and read it and get a good laugh out of it and then use it as a sex guide.
Well, we should tell folks about the guide to getting it on. Not that either Dr. Hall or I authored this book, but it is a great manual, and it's written in lay terms, and it's got fabulous illustrations. They're almost like cartoons.
And I give it as a gift to my friends, my adult friends. They give it as a gift to their kids.
Yeah, to my amazement, I mean the guy who wrote that book contacted me at the beginning and asked me to help edit it, the very very first edition to that. And so I think it's gone to be like one of the number one sex manuals out there.
Yeah, it's in different languages now. It's about 2 inches thick, this edition.
Yeah, the first one, I have the very first one here. I'm holding it right now. He originally had it under the Goofy Foot Press.
Well, that's still his imprint.
Is he still doing that?
Yeah.
And, my edition was only 1 inch thick. It just gets bigger and bigger every year.
They added a lot of good stuff to it.
Yeah, it's worth getting just to look at the pictures.
And read the section on Barbies.
I was trying to find his name in here.
Paul Joannides.
Oh, thank you. Hey, there it is. Yes, exactly. I would have said Joannides and totally botched up the last name there. I'm going to check in with our listeners here and just remind you, we are live tonight, so you can call us toll-free, 877-876-5227. That's in the U.S., toll-free, 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, you can call toll-free at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And if you are local, the number is 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. The doctor, Dr. Hall, is in the house, so call up with a question.
And I want to encourage the Canadian listeners that I marched with several Canadian students of the Institute. So you're going to get some good sex educators up there, too. You already have, but we're going to get some more of them up there.
Oh, cool. Yeah, well, Canada's not as uptight as the U.S., is it?
No.
I don't think any country is as uptight as the U.S.
Yeah, there's some Eastern European countries that are still pretty stuck.
So tell me again. You were talking about this book about how the government's trying to control our sexuality.
Marty Klein's book, America's War on Sex.
America's War on Sex. Did this just recently come out? Or?
About 2 years ago.
About 2 years ago, okay. And can you give us like the bottom line, a summary of what the book's about?
Well, the bottom line is that he in each chapter, dissects the lies of the far right and our government, giving examples of the way they mislead us, the way they fund things that are inimical to our sexual health, the way they try to make us afraid of sex. The name of the game is to make us afraid of sex, and especially afraid of our neighbor's sex. We might have a sex fiend fiend living next door to us, someone who has sex more. A sex fiend is someone who has sex more than we do.
Yes. Just like a sexual pervert is somebody who does it different than we do.
Yes.
So, okay, so what is the government's motivation for this? Why should the government care?
The only thing I can think of is control. If you can control someone's sexuality, you have a major handle on controlling their life. If we were basically free to be as sexually comfortable and sexually pleasured, we would be less interested in war. We would be less interested in a whole range of antisocial behaviors that we seem to participate in. So I suspect, and of course you'll never be able to do any research that will prove anything, but I suspect that this is a tool for control. It always has been a tool of control of human behavior. Religion has used it. The authorities within religion have used it to control behavior. And governments, kingdoms, political parties, looking for ways to control people because you want people to do what you want them to do if you're a powerful person. And so you want them to do...
There's some models for this in nature. For instance, an interesting thing happens in a wolf pack. You know, the alpha pair, this would be the dominant male and the dominant female, are the only ones that procreate in a wolf pack. And one of the ways that this happens is it's through constant reaffirmation of who is in charge, and that's usually through violence and intimidation. But
I can see some parallels there.
The testosterone levels drop in the wolves that are not mated, and they literally do not procreate. They do not raise any young. Only the alpha pair reproduce, and then the other wolves take care of their offspring. So this is one of the ways that dominance is asserted, even in nature. And I'm certainly not saying that human beings should continue to do this, but rather I'd kind of like to shame people and go, so, okay, you're no more evolved than a pack of wolves.
Well, this is the shame-free zone, so we shouldn't be talking about that.
Huh?
I said, but this is the shame-free zone.
Yeah, that's right. I shouldn't be trying to shame people, should I? That's it. It was really funny when I launched my website. The whole thing was that, you know, it was supposed to be sexwithoutshame.com. And when you go to that website, it's just oozing with sexual shame, because the only way I could make people feel safe to come there is if I took out all the nudity and all the overt sexuality, you know, and really cleaned it up for them.
Yeah, well, the Pride Parade was pretty clean yesterday, too.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. That was cold, too.
I mean, I don't know, that picture you sent me, it looked like there was a lot of toplessness going on.
Yeah, but that was a very local event.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you were talking about how you control people, and also just how you turn them into warriors. Is by, you know, like taking their reason for living away. And there was an interesting thing that I just recently found out about, and I guess this was actually with the PLO. Apparently they had a special force called the Black Septemberists. Did you ever hear about this?
No, but I can give you some research that's better. In a large number of societies where mothers carry their children around for the first couple of years, and the children are in constant contact with their parents, they turn out societies that are very peaceful. In societies where children are not paid a lot of attention to, are basically on their own, they turn out very aggressive warrior societies. And this has been studied over large numbers of cultures. So the secret to a peaceful culture are loving parents, well-nurtured children, and these well-nurtured children learn about sexuality because they live in close contact with their parents as they grow up.
And in an ideal world, we get to start our kids off right and make sure that they're not exposed to negatives. But one of the things that I liked about this particular story about the Black Septemberists was these terrorists were suicidal terrorists, And they had been trained to want to not only kill, but to go ahead and die in the process of killing. And they were very, very good at what they did. And then all of a sudden, the political objectives of Arafat and the PLO, their political objectives were met. And this was back in the 70s, the 1970s. And they had this radical, suicidal group of men. They didn't know what to do with them. And they thought, well, how are we going to get them to stop killing? Because they don't want to. They have no reason to live. And they just want to keep on killing. And if we allow them to continue to do what they do, they're going to, it's all going to backfire on us, and we're not going to be able to maintain our political objectives. So they had a really interesting fix to this. What they did was they selected a bunch of young women and asked them to come to a party in service of their country. So they tried to appeal to their patriotism. And all of these terrorists were invited to the party, and basically what this was a hookup. And somehow or another, you know, boy met girl, and they all got married and lived happily ever after. And the funny thing about this is that as soon as the guys had a woman and a child, they were married, they had children, they didn't want to kill anymore. And they would not take any suicidal assignments anymore.
Sounds good to me.
Well, it just seems that this kind of ties into what you were talking about, that if the government can separate you from pleasure, connection, you know,
yep,
that you do become a more effective killing machine.
Or if they can make you afraid of sex.
Yeah, well, they kind of go together.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat.
So that's why you and I are in the sex education business.
It absolutely is. This is very, very important to me. I think that sex is a way towards peace. I really do. So when you're teaching kids about sex, and, you know, they're not really kids. Let's face it, they're young adults.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that their relationship with sex is maybe a little more infantile than the relationship to the rest of their life?
Well, it's awfully hard to you know, find that out. I don't require my students to reveal very much. I did have an assignment in which they wrote about how their culture affected their understanding of themselves as sexual beings. And that was fascinating because they all were in touch with what they had learned from parents, from church, from school. And to delve into that was an edifying process. On my part, to be able to read those papers and grade them, but more so on their part, to be able to write them and think those things through. And so getting in touch with, what did I learn? How did I learn what I learned? That was the big thing for me when I went back to school to study sex, was what did I learn? You know, how did I learn it? I was a virgin at 22 when I got married. And, you know, probably...
How did that feel for you?
Looking back on it now, I was very ignorant. At the time, it was the natural thing to do.
Yeah. Well, some people, you know, I have never experienced that, but some people say it can be quite special that you...
Let me tell you, getting there was a really difficult thing. Getting to the wedding and still be a virgin was really hard.
Were you trying?
I was horny.
But you were trying to stay a virgin?
I had to. I would have lost my scholarship, and so would my fiancé.
How? I'm not sure how you would lose your scholarship.
If I got married, I was on a Navy scholarship. Law said you had to stay unmarried till you graduated.
Oh.
I would have had to pay back all my tuition, 4 years worth of tuition.
Oh, okay. So you could not get married.
Talk about the government controlling.
No kidding. Why? Why did they have this rule? I don't get it.
I guess because they could.
Okay. Which kind of feeds into one of my theories, which is, you know what, in nature, once an organism matures, it becomes sexually viable. And I've often wondered if the government doesn't want to keep us under, you know, their thumb when it comes to our sexuality, because that is actually, if we became sexually matured, we'd be grown-ups.
Yep.
So this is one way of infantilizing the entire population.
Well, that's one way to control it. I wouldn't go so far as to keep us infantile, but to certainly keep a part of our life, keep us ignorant about some important parts of our life.
Well, it does seem to me that sexuality is where our adult empowerment springs from, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a population of people who don't know how to defend themselves. They're not sure what they should think, you know? Tell me what to think. You know, you got to turn on the TV and get those public service announcements that tell you how to raise your kids. Because nobody knows how to do anything unless the government tells them how to do it.
Well, there's no license for having children and no education for having children unless you learned at your parents' knee how to raise children. And so we have people who learn how to do sex and had kids but not learn how to raise children, raising children who then learn how to do sex but not have children. And parents, please don't ever think that your kids won't know how to do sex. They will learn because it's all around them. So it's not, you know, let's tell them it's abstinence only and don't do sex because that doesn't work. People who take abstinence only courses and people who don't, people who take the pledge to be virgins and don't, they almost the same rate of being non-virgins at their marriage. Almost the same rate, whether you took an abstinence-only course or a comprehensive course or no course.
Right. Yeah, so we know that doesn't work. But let's we know we've got a lot of college students listening tonight, but I'm sure we've got parents out there, too. What can you, as a college professor who's been teaching college students for years now about sexuality, what can you tell parents? What do you wish they had told their kids before they got to you?
Well, what I wish that kids would learn from their parents and elders is responsibility, taking responsibility for their own behavior. I see way, way too many young people today who don't know how to take responsibility for their own behavior, who are willing to take a gun in their hand or a knife in their hand and do whatever they want to do and not accept responsibility for it. Parents teaching kids to be responsible young people, responsible kids. And I was lucky that way. Responsible kids know how to behave in various situations. They have the capability of making intelligent decisions. Maybe not perfect capability, maybe not mature capability. But if you can get your kid to the point where your kid can say, no, I'm not going to do that because it's wrong, or I don't want to do that because it'll screw up my life. I mean, I have a young friend who just turned 18, and someone asked her on TV when she was 16, are you still a virgin? She said, yes, I haven't found the person that I'm close enough to do that. It's very simple, very straightforward, very responsible sexual behavior.
Well, how would you recommend teaching responsibility?
Well, first of all, you need parents who would take responsibility for their job, for raising children.
Well, for some people, they're going to interpret that as, well, you know, yes, I want my children to adhere to a strict set of rules, such as abstinence.
No, that's different.
So can you distinguish between teaching abstinence and teaching responsibility?
Following rules and being able to think responsibly are two different things. You know, parents know that. They don't follow rules very well. Teaching your child intelligent decision-making, what the future looks like if you make choice A versus choice B. I knew what the future looked like if I made choice B when I was a young man.
Right.
It looked really grim. And so I chose choice A. Now, there was a lot of pressure and a lot of other things on me. And a lot of ignorance. I mean, I frankly don't want to go into that, but I was very ignorant, which is why I went back and studied sex in my adulthood. But the point here is that parents, get a sex education. Learn about human sexuality so you can converse with your children. Learn what to do when you see your five-year-old playing doctor with a person, a kid of the other gender.
What would be the thing to do if you see your five-year-old playing doctor with another kid?
I know your kids are having fun, but you need to go. You need to not do that right now. You're too young for that. Or, you know, there's all sorts of things you can say without saying, stop that, go to your room.
In other words, don't shame them.
Don't shame them. And you know, when you see a two-year-old masturbating, you don't say, keep your hands away from there. Don't touch that down there. What you say is, I know that's fun. Don't do it in the bedroom and don't do it in front of grandma and grandpa.
I had a situation like that with my niece years and years ago when she was about 4 years old. I said, you know, I'd prefer you did that in your room.
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple thing to say.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be a big production.
We teach our kids to be circumspect about other things. We don't hang out the dirt. We don't want our kids hanging out the dirty laundry about Grandma and Grandpa or Uncle Joe or whatever. So we teach them to be discreet. No reason to be not to be discreet about sexuality.
Yeah.
And of course, they're seeing it on TV. I mean, the Big Love, Swing Town, the shows that are coming down the pike now, The L Word, Sex and the City, they're going to see it all. The problem is wanting to model it. If you're a good parent, you're a good model, and the kids model you.
Hmm. Wise words. So don't try to shelter them from life. Try to give them the tools so they can navigate it.
Absolutely. So what's coming down the road with your shows?
Oh, I have a bunch of pre-records. We just taped them today. I'm actually taking off for a couple of weeks.
Very good.
So we're gonna have next week. We've got you're not gonna believe this, but I interviewed Reed, your friend Reed.
The cuddle party guy.
Yes, the guy who throws the cuddle parties. I interviewed him this morning.
Good.
So he's gonna be on next Monday.
Very good.
Yeah, we had so much fun today. We filmed it. We taped it earlier this morning around 10 o'clock. Yeah. I've actually only been to one cuddle party. But
very valuable tool.
Yeah. Really, he was a lot of fun on the show.
Well, I look forward to coming back on your show.
Well, I look forward to it, too. And I know you want to talk about alternative relationships, like polyamory or something next time.
Well, this is a big question for young people today.
Yeah.
You know, they're like chafing at the bit. I can't do monogamy. Well, all right. What are the other relationships?
What are the other options? Absolutely. We'll have you on again. Absolutely. Is there any websites or anything that you would like our listeners to come to visit you at?
Well, I edit the Electronic Journal of Human Sexuality, www.ejhs.org. And you can read a lot about sex there.
Okay.
Plus a lot of reviews of good books and DVDs.
What if somebody wants to email you with a question? Can they contact you?
Yes, my email address is on the journal.
Okay. Good enough. And once again, our guest tonight was Dr. Dave Hall from University of Pacific. And if you want to see him on TV, go to kcra.com and just search the website for Prostitution 101. Not that Dr. Hall teaches that, but that's the name of the episode. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
It's my pleasure to be here.
We'll have you back again. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Veronica Monet offers help, healing, and hope in the form of private telephone sessions. Email veronica@sexwithoutshame.com to schedule an appointment or visit www.sexwithoutshame.com to find out what Veronica can do for you.